Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong, and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. Today, we're going to open the furnace once again for another unmade A Nightmare on Elm Street movie. This time around, we're heading into Freddy's Origins. The movie that we're tackling today is technically titled either Krueger, The First Kills, or some people call it A Nightmare on Elm Street, First Kills. We have with us a very special guest judge today. First time on the pod, we've got Patrick O'Donnell. Patrick, how's it going?
Hello. It goes well. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. Could you do me a favor and introduce yourself to the Development Hell audience?
Of course. Of course. Hi, everyone. My name is Patrick O'Donnell. I know Joshua. He's been a longtime friend of mine and a longer time friend of my beautiful wife, Elise Marion. Yeah, we go way back. And I'll never forget the first time we met. Well, way back, about 11 years, not way back. We were talking about movies and I made a comment and you were like, whoa, he knows what he's talking about. And right away I was like, why wouldn't I know what I'm talking about? And it was a bit like chest bump banging-ish a little.
Mostly, what were we talking about?
I can't remember the specifics, but it was in the realm of horror for sure, because like I knew Elise was really into horror movies and, you know, she told me you were into horror movies and yeah. So, you know, obviously like feeling the waters of where we're all stand. And I thought that was such a comment to say right in front of my face. And I was like, yeah, I definitely do right back at you. But ever since then, it's been the best. Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 11 years.
Yeah, no, 12 years now that it's 2023, but yeah.
Jeez.
It's time flies.
We are getting up there.
Oh, and I don't work in film. I do love it. I love horror, obviously, a lot. I am a nurse, and I was thinking what to say about this, and it's I get to see real life horror. And I also get to see a lot of the nice things about real life, too, but it comes with its own fair share, so some crazy stuff.
You don't have to answer this. Have you seen anything gruesomely lately through your work?
Have I seen anything gruesome lately through my work? Someone lately had a pretty big wound that I got to dress daily. And that took some time. Okay. And that was, you know, a lot. I would say 2 years ago, which is not recent, one person had a wound on their foot that was just wild. Like, you could swear you were looking at a Hollywood movie. You could see the tendons. I had to put stuff on the tendons and like apply it with a Q-tip. You could see it move when you touched it. It was, and that person was actually a huge horror fan. And so I can't say anything really about them more, but they rocked and they had a wild wound on their foot. Yeah. But, you know, life goes on and they seem like a very strong person. So I hope the best for them and their family. Yeah.
And you know what? Everyone's alive. And that's okay. Yeah. Wow. That's a good story. Thank you. I'm screaming. On that terrifying note, I'm going to mention that in the conversation today, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about Elm Street as a franchise in total. I'm excited about it because it's one of my favorites, but we'll get more into it.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Freddy's Nightmares, which was the Nightmare on Elm Street TV show, and the opening episode, which is titled No More Mr. Nice Guy, which is another Freddy's origin story. Yeah. Then we're going to be talking about First Kills, the movie that we're all here to discuss, and we're going to end with the future of Freddy. Today's sources for this episode include two articles from Bloody Disgusting that you can check out in the show notes. So first things first, A Nightmare on Elm Street is a 1984 horror franchise created by none other than Wes Craven and New Line Cinema. 9 films total. Gun to your head, what would you say this franchise is about?
Nightmares. This is the Freddy Krueger show. It is facing your fears, I guess, after the first one. You know, turn your back to them. Try not to die when you go to sleep.
Who's our big bad?
The man himself, like the new generation of like Hollywood monsters, Freddy Krueger.
I like to think of him almost as you said, the new generation. I like to think of Freddy as our new Dracula and of Jason as our new Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And I always kind of see, different parallels between those two.
Oh, I was thinking about this earlier today, hugely. You know the old Warner Brothers, you know all the old monsters, the Wolfman. I mean, that's why Hotel Transylvania works. And then you have these people, they're like their own new generation. And you can almost go as far back as bringing Leatherface into it, because I think you could bring in Michael Myers. You know, the boogeyman. Yeah, and the pantheon grows. Like, I love the fact that, like, Slender Man exists. A little after me, I didn't watch it evolve. Oh, this is wicked.
Definitely. I'm a big fan or very fascinated by this new era of sort of creepypasta horror. Pat, what was your first impression? What was your first experience with these movies?
Oh my God. It could be its own episode. So I've been thinking to say this as quickly as possible. I was 6 years old. This is my like, that meme of the woman smoking the cigarette being like, my parents rented The Exorcist when I was 5. When I was 6 years old, I was at my next door neighbor's house and they had kids our age and they rented it. And the mom, who was also my babysitter, said, okay, well, you can watch it if you phone home. So I phoned home and my parents said yes. I was the 4th of 5 children. So they were like, okay, whatever. Just do whatever, you know, could be home by dinner. And we got, would say maybe 45 minutes through the movie. And I just remember they had to stop it and take me outside in the bright sunny daylight and like tell me everything was okay. And we started like playing catch and, you know, because I was just way too scared. I was just freaking out, I guess. And Freddy haunted my dreams as a child for years. And then, funny enough, Scream got me into horror when I was 14. And it wasn't until I was 18 when I watched Nightmare on Elm Street again. And I was like, oh, and it's still so good. Yeah.
So was this the first horror movie you ever laid eyes on?
Oh, yeah. This is it, and it messed me up. Freddy scared me.
The only kid at the party freaking out?
No, it wasn't a party. It was like the neighbor's kids, and the neighbor's kids were older than me. The girl was a year older than me, and the two boys were like 3 and 6 years older than me. And I was just there every day in the summer. We were like thick as thieves. They had the Nintendo. They had a VCR. They had a swimming pool. And it was just a sunny afternoon. But I'm sure whoever was watching me was also pretty scared. They must have been. They must have been like, okay, this is an easy opportunity to also cut ourselves out of this as well. But at one point when we were outside and they were like trying to calm me down, one of the older boys, we were playing catch and the ball went in the bushes. And I went into the bushes to get it. And they were like, Freddy Krueger's in there. And I was like, ah! like ran out of the bushes. Oh, man.
Listen, all of the movies are great, and everyone definitely loves the first one. Do you have, like, an imprint on any of the other films in the series? Like, which of these are your favorite?
Oh, I was thinking about this all day. This is a great, of course, question for this or Friday the 13th. Definitely 3. You can't not be touched by 3 if you love this series. 3 is great. Yeah. You know, they bring back Nancy.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't have an easy go for her or her dad, right? And it has so many classic lines. Yeah. Credited Larry Fishburne, which is also great.
Hilarious, always.
Yeah, but 2 really imprinted on me because there's also the Will Smith, like DJ Jazzy Jeff song that was like a nightmare on my street.
Nightmare on my street.
Yeah, and yeah. It has the quote. I didn't know which movie it was from until I like committed to rewatching all the movies. But first of all, like 2 is so like this movie is bizarre, and then you realize it's just okay. Mm-hmm. But it's got the "you've got the body and I've got the brains" line, and that song when I like saw 2, I remember the video, and we used to as kids because like you know thick as thieves, us and those neighbors. Love the song as well. So I was like, oh my God, this is the line. This is the movie. Last night I watched 4. I was like, okay, 4, not bad. Of course, obviously, New Nightmare.
I think my favorites of besides 1 and 3, which I think is a given.
Yeah, it's a given.
Yeah, I love 4. I think 5 is a little bit underappreciated. I think 5 gets lumped in sometimes with 6. Ooh. But 5 is outrageous. It's so fun and so weird.
I'm excited, actually, after watching 4 last night. So first of all, sorry for not asking what you're ranking on this. But after watching 4, I was like, okay, I'm excited for 5. And, like, 6 is the worst.
Terrible.
Yeah, 6 is...
6 is so weird. Did you rewatch it?
Not in a long time, 6. 6 has, like, so Alice bad. Cooper and Roseanne Barr. Or am I lumping both of them into the one?
And Tom Arnold?
Yes. Yeah,
6 is... And Tom Arnold is there, too.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Yeah, 6 also showcases some Freddy origin stories. So you're seeing a little bit about Freddy before he becomes a dream demon and very, very strange.
Yeah, and like the camera, like the lens, like when we're talking about this now, I remember like just particular scenes and shots as like very like a distorted camera, like almost like a bug eye or something. But yeah, you do get to that little peek into Freddy's origins or part of Freddy before he's Freddy.
Who did Alice Cooper play? Was Alice Cooper his father? I can't recall exactly. I
would want to guess that. And, you know...
I guess if you would have not certain.
If we say it is, then it is, right? No, just... no, that's awful.
As I've learned
so
with this
sorry,
podcast in the past, no, it's not true. People come and they will, they correct me. And I think that's lovely. Thank you. Don't be mad.
No, that is lovely. There's a radio ad these days. You can cut this out because it's a nonsense story. But there's a radio ad these days that's like, tired of those keyboard warriors? We've got a way around it. Have a radio ad. Radio ads, they can't reply back on a keyboard. And I'm like, you idiots, you'd also have a website. And then people would just go to your website and shit on your website. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's so dumb.
I do think it's true, though, because it's there isn't that immediate, like, communication that the internet provides with radio or even podcasts.
Yeah, because the internet, your keyboard's right there. That. Like, go for it.
Pat, why do you think Freddy Krueger and Elm Street affected so many people and scares so many people?
I think it affects and scares so many people because no matter where you go or run or hide to, you know, you fall asleep eventually and you fall asleep on your own.
Yeah.
You know, we don't share dreams with other people. So that to have like another presence in your dream that isn't you would be just truly terrifying. And, I think that's why it's so universal. I remember taking someone, a group of us went to see Freddy versus Jason, and she had never seen a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And she literally said, like, I don't want to go home alone and go to bed. Like screw you guys for making me see this. And I was in awe. I was so happy. I mean, poor her. But that was that because that is really the most like guttural, like, oh shit, I have to go to bed at some point.
The last time that really I feel like the last time that happened to me where I was scared to go home was maybe, and this is not this isn't cute, but maybe Paranormal Activity. I remember that really fucked me up.
And I loved it. Love Paranormal Activity. Yeah. It was scary because
I was stoned and I was 19.
Oh yeah, it happens.
Yeah. Freddy gets you when you're most vulnerable, asleep, and that's pretty fucked.
Yeah, and what I love about that is the little like trivia that when Wes Craven was, you know, shipping the script around, that was one of the things people like pumped the brakes on. They're like, this isn't scary, like being attacked in your sleep. And then, you know, of course, it turns out to like strike like such like the deepest nerve in people. And Freddy crushes it. The concept is there to be crushed. And, you know, Robert Englund, holy moly, just knocks it out of the park. He's part of the package, too, as well. Like, he is also part of why Freddy's so scary.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Pat, would you mind if I gave a little bit of a seminar on the first episode of Freddy's Nightmares?
Please do. Yeah, I'd love it.
So before we get into our main topic today of Krueger first kills, I wanted me and Pat to revisit the first episode of Freddy's Nightmares, the pilot titled No More Mr. Nice Guy. Because in this pilot 1988 episode, we're seeing a Freddy Krueger origin story before he becomes a dream demon. We're seeing him on trial, and we're seeing him sort of have his lead up to his death by mob. And it's very sort of similar to what I believe we were eventually going to see with Krueger First Kills. So the first episode was released on October 8th, 1988, and it was directed by Tobe Hooper of Texas Chainsaw Massacre fame, which is super bizarre and interesting. And this would lead on to become an anthology horror series hosted by Freddy Krueger. So as I mentioned, this episode is a prequel story, and it's the trial and death of Fred Krueger. He becomes acquitted when he's on trial because someone forgot to read him his rights. I'm not even sure how much of a thing that really is in real life. It seems to happen in movies a lot.
I feel like we wouldn't get to the end of the trial and then they say like, oh, wait, pump the brakes.
I know. Who knows? It seemed silly, but you know what? It drove the plot forward, and I appreciate that. So you watched this recently, right?
Yeah, I watched it two or three nights ago, and I thought it was going to be a bit more of the trial, truthfully. It's only not too, you know, just sort of that beginning where he's on trial. And then it really is sort of that mob mentality. I was kind of taken about how quickly they leave the courtroom and they're like, well, where did he go? Let's just go after him. And then there's obviously a huge thing about guilt that the father feels for not reading him his rights, which obviously allows him to go free, and he's going to come back and stalk his daughters again and stalk him. So it sort of wrestles with his guilt a bit, and then ultimately it is Freddy just becoming Freddy.
Yeah. Something that I found scary is that in the courtroom, we see what's going on from Freddy's perspective, and it's pretty fucked up. Like, he hones right in on the young girls. Everything is really like distorted and scary. And later on, we're sort of seeing him from his perspective stalking a family. And it was a little bit scarier than I remembered it being. I remembered this being pure trash, and it had moments of interesting stuff.
Yeah, I found the second half to be like, it really turned into a good little bit of Freddy stalking the family, and they kind of have the setup where you think he is going to go after the daughters, and then he kind of turns it more on the father cop who forgets to read him the Miranda rights. And I remember thinking like, wow, this is neat in that we're finally watching Freddy go after an adult and not just teenagers again. But it almost did seem a bit like comical at first, but then he did a great job keeping Freddy's face distorted and out of view, and or very, very up close on his teeth. And I remember thinking, wow, like even just his teeth is very Freddy Krueger without the Freddy Krueger makeup. And then you're like, ooh, this is still Freddy. And I think that moment was when I was like, this guy's dangerous. And the movie, not the movie, sorry, the TV show sort of turned for me and made me sit upright a bit more. They did a great job with.
Do you think that maybe they didn't show? Do you think that maybe they didn't show his full face because they didn't do the full makeup?
Yeah, I think. I also think this is like, you know, pre him being burned. You know, you sort of keep that mystique, and I mean, one of the big rules in horror is like, don't show your monster too early. And it was. It was, we know, by 1988, you know what Freddy looks like. So to think, like, this is the very first episode, and this is Freddy before he gets, like, you know, burned alive by the town parents. Of course, we just want to see what he looks like, but they just, Hooper keeps him that at bay, and I think it's both really smart and really intentional and does a good job keeping him scary. And in terms of not wanting to do the whole makeup, maybe, because don't they do the whole makeup when after they burn him, like near the end? You see some of it?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. But I thought it was great.
It's pretty crappy, though.
Yeah. It's not the movie budget.
It's a fascinating episode.
Very. Yeah. It's the only episode of the TV series I've seen. I remember seeing commercials for it as a kid. But yeah, never. So I was, thank you for hooking me up with watching the episode. It was great.
It's funny. I totally forgot about it. And then when we landed on the topic of Freddy Krueger first kills, I thought, oh yeah, this kind of already exists, sort of.
Yeah.
I have to revisit it.
First kills, not to like spoil what we're going to talk about later, but obviously feels like it would be much more of the courtroom scene, or much more of the courtroom scene set somewhere else. And maybe why I was a little surprised. But I do love the idea of the origin story as well. Like, that's great. I mean, give me whatever the ultimate version was going to be from the one guy, or give me the origin story. I'm here for both.
Before we move on into Krueger First Kills, do you have any other thoughts on this episode of Freddy's Nightmares?
I wondered if it was going to be him, like, still haunting the whole town, and if we would see these characters again in future episodes. I'm curious about that. I thought it was nice. Like I said,
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I mean, I took, like, a little list of notes as I'm reading them here. We're not, like, talking about super specific details. It was fun. Makes me want to watch the rest of the series casually. And you're just curious to see how much of a budget they would pump in, because clearly this didn't have the biggest budget, and that's fine. 1988. I'm also curious.
Yeah.
I'm so rambly, I apologize. But so in 1988, when this series was coming out, I'm curious where the movie series was, because 84 was the first one.
It was 1988. I think this was the fifth movie was 89. So this must have been the fourth movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, they went pretty quickly when these ones with Nightmare, or pretty successively, fourth movie, which I just recently watched. Yeah,
The fourth movie was 88.
Hey, so
the
fourth
movie was this year.
Nice. Love that it's concurrent.
The fourth movie came out 2 months before the TV show.
Oh, wow. Freddy Nation, right?
Right in the middle of it all.
Yeah, right in the middle.
Yeah. Kind of wish I could have experienced it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. So it's 88. That would have been, like I said, I was six. So that would have been 89 when my friends rented the first one and showed it to me. Yeah, this is, Freddy was in the air, though, for sure. And as a kid, like, destined
probably
to be
peaking,
a horror kid.
Honestly.
Sorry?
Yeah, I think he was peaking in 1988, because I think the fourth movie was probably the most successful of them all, and it was sort of downhill from there financially.
So I could
see
that.
This was right at the height of Freddy popularity.
I could see that. It also kind of made me think of Friday the 13th, 6, because, like, at one point they go and they bring Freddy back to life. Like, they dig him up and get him going again.
Yeah,
And I was like, oh, this is very much like bringing Jason back. Which kind of happened in the TV episode we watched too, right? They go to move the body, and the body's not there, and it's like claw marks, and you're like, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I was just rewatching Friday the 13th, 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, and I forgot that lightning kind of brings him back to life in that movie too.
Oh, wicked. Nice. Well, it'll get you. Hey, he's Frankenstein, right?
Yes, he is.
From our earlier conversation, yeah.
Pat, would you mind if I gave a seminar on today's main topic, which is Krueger First Kills?
Yes, very excited.
The whole main event for today was that we're going to talk about the unmade Nightmare on Elm Street origin story, Krueger First Kills, also known as A Nightmare on Elm Street, First Kills. Rumored for a long time to be the serious courtroom drama, The Trial of Fred Krueger, A Nightmare on Elm Street, First Kills is sort of a thing of legend in the horror community. Some sources believe that New Line was really interested in pursuing the style of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, which is why they approached the filmmaker himself, John McNaughton. It seems to me, based on a couple of sources that we found, that John McNaughton and New Line Entertainment had different visions of what this courtroom drama was going to look like. My interpretation of things is that New Line Cinema wanted this to be a little bit more gritty and realistic, set in our world. And McNaughton, I believe, was more interested in setting the film in hell and making this more of a supernatural, existential type of horror crime drama. Some of this was confirmed in a 2015 interview with Patrick Cooper of Bloody Disgusting. He was talking to McNaughton, who revealed that his development on a Freddy Krueger origin was actually put to rest because of a very surprising Adam Sandler project, which was revealed in the late 90s. So here is a quote from that interview from McNaughton. "I started thinking about what we haven't seen before, and the idea came of, well, where did Freddy Krueger come from and when he returned to the first picture? Hell. Nothing could keep me from going to hell. And the idea of actually setting a story in hell, that to me, I was just like a pig in shit. New Line had made, what's his name, the comedian that gets so little respect and makes so much money." He's talking about Adam Sandler's Little Nicky. And he goes on to say, "Yeah, it was one of his goofy comedies, Little Something or Another. There was a number of scenes in hell, and it was his first comedy not to do well." So yeah, he's talking about Little Nicky, this late 90s Adam Sandler project that underperformed at the box office. McNaughton continues by saying, "Right, and after that, well, that didn't do well. New Line didn't want to go back to hell. So I basically told them to go to hell. Just the idea of being under the thumb of the studio and being called on to satisfy genre expectations is not something that would make me happy. They were unwilling to go to hell with me, and it just came apart." So kind of cool that this guy allegedly is really standing up for his vision of things here, right?
Yeah, he was just like, hard line. Listen, if you're not doing it this way, it's not happening with me. Sorry.
It's a damn shame. You were telling me about another movie that this fella produced that I was very surprised to hear about earlier today.
Oh, yeah. My quick little Google revealed he also did Wild Things, which if you were a teen in the 90s or even younger, that was definitely on the radar for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely Wild was. Things. Which is funny because this is not the most serious auteur ever, you know? He's made some pretty silly, weird movies. So it's kind of interesting that he was so, I don't know, dedicated to his vision here that he would tell New Line to fuck off.
Yeah, and to just not have another thing to go do for a bit and then come back and, you know, have another ticket eventually down the line. But, I mean, if you don't, if you see it one way and you don't get to do it, I'm sure you'd go to work every day being like, man, why aren't we doing it this way? And truthfully, the visions are pretty different. And what you said, or there was something you sent me where he said, you know, it would just be a little too similar to the tone of Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, which he had just recently done. And you can also understand not wanting to just sort of like go and do that again and you know, go through those motions. Because
They just wanted him to do the same thing. They just wanted him to do the same thing over again.
Yeah, that'd be a rough experience to do that twice in a row. I wouldn't want to be like, yeah, that's the camp I want to go back to for 8 weeks or 7 weeks or however long.
Pat, have you ever seen Little Nick?
Yes.
What was your impression of it?
not as funny as the rest of his movies. I was, you know, Adam Sandler, grew up listening to his tapes and his albums and then Saturday Night Live. And then, all of his movies were bangers. And what that one, it rings true that was sort of one of his first movies that didn't really, hit the mark, at least critically. Critically, that sounds hilarious to say. Yeah. And I remember I rented it like after the fact, years back. I was like, you should go back and watch this. And I did. And some scenes were funny, but it wasn't great. And also, too, like comparing Little Nicky to what this guy would do taking Freddy to hell, that's still apples to oranges. That's just reeks of like big execs being like, no. It's just without even listening to what it really is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I agree.
Oddly frustrating. But no, Little Nicky was okay.
Well, we heard a little bit more about this project in another interview with Bloody Disgusting, but this time with none other than Freddy Krueger himself, Robert Englund. He reportedly discussed with them sort of why he wanted this movie to be made. And so here's a quote from him. I always thought that not having a prequel is a misruling in the mythology of A Nightmare on Elm Street. It got close to being rectified with Tobe Hooper's pilot for the TV series, and there was a script that was supposedly to be directed by John McNaughton, who did Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. There was a prequel script. I think it was called Krueger the First Kills, and it was the last children being killed. The two detectives that found Freddy and busted him. And then the body of the film were the ambulance chasing sleazy lawyers that get Freddy off. The lawyers are actually the best part of the script. There's two of them. Freddy in court, Freddy at the table, Freddy on the witness stand, Freddy in jail. But it's about the lawyers getting him off. They get him off and Freddy gloats too much on the courtroom stairs. The end of the movie is Freddy being burned alive. I've had a fascination with these projects ever since I did that pilot with Tobe Hooper. Oof. It sounds kind of great, right?
Yeah, I would love to go on both of these rides. The real world version, like what, especially like the hearing about how excited Robert Englund is getting about these lawyer characters, to pit them with Freddy Krueger. Like, that just sounds like watching like three people just watching something burn and then getting to this peak where they win and inspiring a mob. Like, that would be a great way to end a movie. That was exciting just listening to you read the synopsis there.
This guy is a very excitable dude. Like, he's always delivering at a 10, and he's so passionate about these movies, and I really appreciate that.
It is great. Like, you love, if this is what you do, like, love what you do, Boris Karloff loved being Frankenstein. Famously. And famously, Bela Lugosi hated being Dracula. So, like, good. England's landing on the right side, for sure. Enjoy the fact that you are Freddy Krueger. And coming with that, I'm sure he spent many nights theorizing and thinking about Freddy and who he is and all that. So he'd be excited.
I have a really disgusting question that's always been on my mind that I've never asked anyone. And I think I'm going to ask you.
I love it. I'm so excited.
Do you think Robert Englund, like, ever had to hook up dressed as Freddy because, like, some weird fan was, like, into that?
Yes. It's my first knee jerk. I'm sure he not only, like, sort of girl milked was like, it. That. Yeah. And, like, probably, like, on the right, it's a numbers game to a degree. Uh-huh. And I'm sure just, like, that one person was like, don't take that off. And he's like, okay, let's do this,
I'm sure that happens to so many of these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, driving in a fast car. If you, in the middle of lovemaking, look up and it's Freddy Krueger, I'd be terrified.
I think if he wasn't in the makeup, I would be interested. I would not like, I don't know if it's like my fetish or anything, but I don't know if I would say no to that experience. And that he's committing to it, too. Like, he's committing to the bit. Mm-hmm.
He's going to think of some real punny lines from time to time.
yeah like, he came up with some of his own.
Hey, there we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, are we getting like Freddy Krueger mm-hmm. from A Nightmare on Elm Street 1? Are we getting Freddy Krueger from like A Nightmare on Elm Street 6? Yeah, because they're pretty different.
I'm seeing 3.
Okay, I like that. 3 is a good one. Welcome to prime time, 3. Bitch.
Yeah,
if he doesn't say that once,
it's the horniest Freddy.
That's not love.
So I am starting to write a little bit for pride.com, and the editor there is interested in doing some horror content. And watching, I don't know if it was the first episode of Freddy's Nightmares, or maybe I watched the second one today too. It just reminded me that Freddy has done drag so many times in this franchise. And I really want to do an article about, like, listing every time Freddy's ever dressed up as a woman.
I love it. Yeah. Because he does. He wears a lot of costumes and he's always ready to make a mockery of something. And, you know, he knows the joke will land more than people would laugh at him for going to drag.
He's always like a sex. I feel like he's been a couple of sexy nurses.
I was so waiting for the wife to turn into Freddy Krueger in the first episode of the show. I was like, man, the wife is saying some creepy lines that are, like, really unsettling. And it's totally in line with me thinking, like, the wife could turn into Freddy at any time because, yeah, Freddy could be anyone. And does he not
like Bugs Bunny?
Yeah, yeah, very true. Mm-hmm. It is kind of not timeless, but, you know, it goes back
to conclusions territory. Do you think we're ever going to see a Freddy Krueger origin film or series?
Yeah, I think we definitely could see a Freddy Krueger origins film. I mean, the 2010 remake was so disappointing. And I don't think we're out of the woodworks in terms of remakes. I think that's just going to be a thing. And I do, there's part of me that thinks someone's going to pick up the ball with this series and say, listen, there's money to be made here. If we just put the right spin on this, we've got a Freddy movie. And once you got a Freddy movie, you can have a Freddy prequel for sure, because it's fertile ground and it's ground that's been talked about. So I say, yes, we definitely could see a Freddy prequel in the future. I'm just hoping. I don't want to jinx it. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious, to quote Michael Scott. I just want a new good Nightmare remake.
Too. I don't know if I want to see not magical Freddy, though. I don't know if I'm interested in seeing a Freddy grounded in reality.
Yes. Freddy grounded in reality would be interesting. It would be dark. I would love it if they're like, listen, we're going to hit you with like three Freddy movies. So don't worry. We've got your back with two other like traditional magical, scary Dream Freddy. But if they only gave us one, I would love McNaughton. I would love to see him like the beginning of the movie. Freddy gets burnt up, goes to hell, and Satan is like, listen, let's figure out what your fate is. And like, it's like this twisted, dream bizarre, terrifying courtroom thing where Freddy goes through this like torturous adventure, because it's hell. You can do anything you want. You could pull him into some crazy situation, pull him back into the courtroom, pull him into some crazy situation. And then at the end, you know, it could be very much like a Christmas Carol, like here are your fates and this is what you've done.
Yeah.
And it's a nightmare. It's a literal nightmare. And at the end, drop him off at the beginning of the first Nightmare on Elm Street. I think that would be the best one.
That's a great idea, but that almost sounds more like a series to me.
Oh, yeah. See, this day and age, that's the right question you have to ask yourself. Can you cram all this into 90 to maybe 105 minutes? Or do you, like, bank it out in 6 to 8 episodes? It's a fair question. Because the Chucky series has done quite well.
Yes. Yeah. And it just got renewed for a third season.
Unfortunately, I have not watched any of it. So I would love to hop on this because I hear it's so good. But that's exciting. I love hearing things getting renewed.
Great.
Things that people like getting renewed. Man, remember Scream Queens? Where's that third season? Oh my god.
I'm interested. I heard a rumor at one point that Spectre Vision, aka Elijah Wood and company who produced Color Out of Space and Mandy, had a pitch for a new Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Ooh.
Like that was officially sort of presented to the rights owners. Elijah Wood's very cool. Mandy was very cool. And even Color Out of Space was pretty cool.
I'm not familiar with either, unfortunately, although I've heard of Mandy. Knowing that Elijah Wood's like a bit of a nerd and stuff and into cool stuff, like I'd be like, okay, thumbs up.
What do you think is ultimately going to be the next move for the franchise?
I think they'll do a remake. They'll do This Is It Again. And just try to forget about 2010, the hot mess that was. Because I actually, for some reason, thought that there was something in the works currently, but I did a super quick Google today and did nothing hit. But, you know, I'm approaching 40, so
nothing
my
really,
super
no.
quick Googles aren't super effective sometimes. And you know what else would be great, too? Because the remake of Friday the 13th was so good. Like, let's keep those things going. Like, these... I might be dating myself as well, but like we can still constantly milk Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein, the Mummy. I think there's a whole other group, and we've talked about it, you know, like from Leatherface to leading the way, the two people, you know, obviously Jason and Freddy, Michael Myers, Pinhead, Chucky, like Ghostface. There's, you know, there's room for these people to like come and be in the public consciousness and be part of the boogeymen that get revisited. And I don't know, obviously the horse gets beaten too much, give it a break, but I don't know, Nightmare, come on. I would love another kick at the can.
Me too.
Yeah.
Patrick, where can you be found on the internet if you so wish to be found?
So I have a tiny Twitter presence where I tweet about some just random stuff. Mostly it's a lot of retweets about boxing or Magic the Gathering or news stuff, but I'm on Twitter at PatrickGavinOD, and I can't remember my Instagram following, but if you find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, and I post cute pictures of my beautiful daughters there as well. But yeah, you can find me there. Stay healthy and stay out of the hospital. Don't find me there.
How about that's not where he wants to see you guys.
No.
Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.